Hi, my name's Courtney Doctor, and I'm the Director of Women's Initiatives at the Gospel Coalition. My friends and I lovingly refer to the women we see once a year at TGCW as our camp friends, because the time we enjoy together at a conference feels just like a week at camp. And I want to encourage you to invite your camp friends, the people you want to sit beside as you listen to great teaching, worship, stay up late chatting about theology and life, and just have fun. And if you don't have camp friends to bring, come and meet some new ones. The final price increase is on May 8th. This is your last chance to save on your registration. Sign up at tgcw24.org. I really hope to see you there. That's tgcw24.org.
When I became a Christian, it was my community confirming, okay, I think you have a teaching gift and all of those types of things. And then I started to do poetry. But it was never on my radar that this was a work that would be profitable, per se. It was like, no, I'm gonna work at Wendy's and I'm gonna do ministry, and that's okay. And I still think that's okay, just because I think just because you have a passion doesn't mean that you're like God or providence is obligated to put you in the field where you can live out your passion. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a super American way of understanding work and things like that. But I think I started to pay attention to the way God was moving, where he was making it possible that I could do what I love and care for myself and my family. And so when I saw that, it was like, oh, maybe I can leave Wendy's and be okay. You know, when I saw that it was a wise decision to make rather than just a passion project. Hello, saints. Welcome to season 3 of Let's Talk, a podcast for women from the Gospel Coalition Podcast Network. I am Jackie Hill Perry, and I'm here with my buddies, my buckos, Jasmine Holmes and Melissa Kruger, to talk about how to apply biblical wisdom to everyday life. This season, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff. We're going to get all up in your business. We're going to discuss idolatry, boundaries, obedience, the law, race, and a whole bunch of other stuff. But before we start today's topic, I'm going to let each of you introduce yourselves. Melissa, remind us, who are you?
Sometimes I can't remember. Do y'all ever feel that way?
Yes. It's like, what's the important stuff to say?
I know. I work for TGC. I'm director of Women's Initiatives. I'm married to Mike, who works at RTS. He's president of RTS Charlotte. And we have 3 kids, Emma, John, and Kate. And I think that's me.
What about you,
Jasmine?
That's good.
I know.
I'm married to Philip. He also works for RTS. He is institutional. Mike is, what is it?
So they get to hang out.
Local, they get to hang out.
They get to hang out.
They're buddies.
We don't get to see them.
Actually, Phil is buddies with Mike and Preston. They're really cute.
I think we need to bring the guys on sometime.
It's really cute.
That would be actually really
fascinating.
That'd be really
fun. It'd be really fun.
I have, can I say I have 3 kids? I have 3.
Yeah.
You do.
I have 3.
I felt the foot.
3 boys. Wayne, Langston, and Jamie. And I do a lot of odds and ends for work. Mostly writing.
Yes. My name is Jackie, and writer, speaker, author, person, married to Preston Perry. We have 3 girls and 1 boy on the way, and a dog named December.
So I forgot my dog.
That's okay.
How old's your dog?
He is the same age as my youngest child, so 9 months.
Oh, that's right.
So we have 2 babies.
I remember seeing that on Instagram and thinking,
it was kind of stupid.
She doing?
It was kind of stupid.
She did, though.
Yeah, people were like, why are you getting a puppy when you have a newborn? It's like, why not?
That's what I was thinking.
Why not? Live life on the edge. Jesus coming back.
You're dealing with bodily fluids everywhere.
Yeah.
So you might as well.
And dogs, you put them in a cage. You know, babies, you actually have to feed them all day.
That's true.
I do remember thinking that. Oh, I can just leave my dog.
Yeah.
You know, in the cage.
Uh huh.
Yeah, it felt very. Yeah. You can't do that with a baby.
No, you can. They'll call CPS.
But I mean, they probably should. But yeah.
But anywho.
So we're here again, and both of you are pregnant.
Yes.
Yes.
Last time it was just Jackie.
We talked about this at our last episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a thing. I don't know. That's just the season we're in, I guess. A season of, you know.
For now.
Yes. Oh, definitely for now.
For now.
Because next season, that is not going to be the case. Hello?
No.
I know.
We just waiting on you, Melissa, to, you know, to get your Sarah on.
If you round this off, I think that we can just be done. You know? No?
Do you see the look of fear on my face?
I mean, I have the same look on my face, and look at me now.
I have a little bit of, like, that would be exhausting, but then I'm like, it's amazing to be pregnant. I know y'all don't feel this right now. Mm-mm-mm. But, you know, there's a little human in you. It's pretty amazing.
Yes.
And then it's exhausting and...
Melissa's the best, though. She's, like, been my number one fan for the last 24 hours because all I have to do is be like, it's a foot. And she's like, really? Because Philip doesn't care. Like, let me not say he doesn't care, but he's like, okay, yeah, I see. It's a foot. Mm, okay. Yeah. And Melissa's like, oh, my gosh. There's a whole baby inside of you. And I'm like,
it's amazing. Yeah.
I do think I'm going to reach a certain age where I miss the whole pregnant stage. Yeah. And then I'll just wait on my kids to have kids.
That's what I'm waiting
and
on.
And I'll, you know, live through them. But today we are going to talk about work. But before we do, I think it's helpful to actually define what is work. Anybody?
That's a good question.
I know.
Right now, Hamilton is going through my mind. Work. Sorry. We can cut that, right?
It was kind of cute.
You might not want to. It's kind of adorable. I kind of liked it.
I know. Like, that's what's going through my mind.
I think about work as being on mission simply because... In the garden, when God gave Adam the first work, it was about the broader vision of bringing creation into submission to God. So Adam was bringing creation into submission to God by naming the animals and taking dominion. And then Eve came, and that was also her work. And then they ended up having to cultivate the ground and, like, take care of and steward. So I think about, like, mission and stewardship. I know that's not, like, a dictionary definition, but...
I actually really like that. The mission and the stewardship part. I hadn't thought about this before. But we know that when the garden was created, it already had fruit. Mm-hmm. Because soon enough, they're eating of the wrong tree.
Right.
So they were stewarding it, but they weren't the creators of it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think we think of our work as, like, our own little creation. But it's something we're given to steward and take care of what's been given to us. I really like that. I hadn't thought about that before. I like the word steward.
With work, though, I think even though the language I think we use was beautiful, you know, cultivation and all of those things. But if we're honest, work isn't like, not all work is fun. Mm-hmm. And I think even the idea of work, when we hear it, it might, you know, strike up some anxiety and some stress. So why do you think that there's so much angst when it comes to either the idea of work or the process of actually working? Because for me, I think when I think work, I think, I have to get up and do something I may or may not want to do.
Right.
You know, I have to get out of my bed and clean. I have to get out of my bed and answer emails. I got to respond to text messages. Just, our whole life is work. And it just, it's a lot.
Back to the garden, though, I think it's the curse. After the sin of, you know, eating the fruit, God was like, okay, well, now it's going to be really hard to cultivate. It's going to be really hard to, you're going to sweat. You're going to have to really struggle. And I think that we still see that today.
Yeah.
Like we're seeing the struggle and not just the good parts of it, the fun parts of it. Because there are fun parts of work, but there's also like, I have to work to make money or we don't eat or I have to keep working consistently or, you know, things will fall through. Like it's not just the joy.
Yeah. There are real thorns and thistles with all of our work, even if it's not physical ones, whether it's just we're tired, we're overworked. Yeah. I mean, there are all these things that I think in perfection wouldn't have been true.
Right.
You know, if we were still back in Eden, I think our work would just be joyful and make us feel like we have a purpose and we're part of something. Mm. Whereas now, you know, our bodies are frail.
Right.
Mm. Yeah. The jobs we do aren't perfect. Everything, you know, there are struggles in whatever work, even if we love our job. Mm-hmm. I mean, so in a lot of ways, I feel very blessed because I've loved pretty much every job I've had. Let me ask you this question. What would you encourage somebody with who doesn't love the job that they're in? Because that's a reality for some people. They go to work every day and they don't like what they do. So I'm thankful, you know, but here's the road, whatever job you have, whether it's paid or unpaid, they're going to be hard things, but some people hate every moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did when I was at Wendy's. It was just like, man, every day I come in here and do the same thing, put out the ketchup, cut up the lettuce, you know, create the chili, all the things. And it was the redundancy of it. Uh-huh. It was just the repetitive nature of doing the same thing every day. And I wonder if that's why work can also be difficult, is that it feels purposeless. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It feels like, am I only doing this to pay my phone bill?
Yeah.
Like, that's it? Like, yeah. I don't feel like I'm affecting the world in any way. But you kind of are, because you're making food to sustain people. It might have a lot of GMOs in it, but I'm helping you stay alive.
You're helping Jasmine, pregnant Jasmine, who cannot get out of bed and fix food, survive.
Yes. And then now DoorDash is a thing, yes, where they bring my work to you.
Yes.
See?
Yeah.
God is good.
Yes. Yeah. So maybe thinking of it in larger terms is helpful. Not in like a, you know, I think we also have to acknowledge that all of us are very privileged in the work that we get to do this point in our lives.
That's right.
Because we all three get to do what we're passionate about and what we love. That doesn't mean that it's always easy, but I do think that I have a certain level of privilege to be able to do the things that I love to do versus doing something that I don't enjoy because I need to provide for my family. I think about that. I thought about that a lot during the pandemic, just like that neither of us lost our jobs. Like, mm-hmm, we both were able to keep going, keep moving forward with the kid. Like, everything stayed stable for us during the pandemic, which is not the same for everybody else.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel inept to give advice about what to do when you don't like your job, because I've actually been really privileged in my work since I started working.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there is something good in just working no matter what. Like, if, mm-hmm, you can get to that, even if it is like, really, I'm doing pickles again today,
right,
you know, that there is something, I do think that there's something, we were created to work. So it is better to be working even a job you don't love, mm, than not to be working at all. Mm-hmm. Like, there's something right. We were made to do this. And so I think, you know, I think the worst thing, and I do think there are rates of depression that are higher, you know, for people who just aren't working, you know, and aren't doing something, because you're still contributing to someone. Someone's paying you to do this. So somebody wants what you're giving. If you're working, even if it's a job you don't love, there's still something intrinsically good about that, that I think that we can hold on to. But I think another question in all of this is, how do we even know what we're passionate about? How do we, like, if we're talking to, you know, a 19-year-old who's in college, and I think this is really stressful for a lot of young people, because you go in, or you're 18 or you're graduating from high school or something, and people are like, what are you going to do with your life? You're 18. Like, that's a big question.
Right.
What are you going to do with your life? But, like, how did you even start to discern, you know, I like to write, I like poetry. I mean, how did you even get to the point where you could make a career out of what you enjoy? Because I think that's a big step to, one, know what you like, and then two, move towards that as a career. Mm. I don't know. Because sometimes I think we think if we like it, then it's not work, so I can't make a career out of it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. And sometimes you think that if we like it, we shouldn't have to work to make a career out of it. Like, it should just fall in our lap and be.
That's right.
Amazing.
Whereas I think we would all say, even though we love what we do, it is still work. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard, you know, to do it.
And we may not always be able to do it, you mm-hmm. know, circumstances and seasons change. I think for me, I started to identify my passions mainly by, what am I actually good at? Mm-hmm. You know, I always got A's in English. Wasn't really hard to do. You know, obviously, I can write. And then when I became a Christian, it was my community confirming, okay, I think you have a teaching gift, and all of those types of things. And then I started to do poetry, but it was never on my radar that this was a work that would be profitable per mm-hmm. se. It was like, I'm gonna work at Wendy's, because that's what I worked at Wendy's for 6 or 7 years, right? I'm gonna work at Wendy's and I'm gonna do ministry, and that's okay. And I still think that's okay, just because I think just because you have a passion doesn't mean that you're like God or Providence is obligated to put you in the field where you can live out your passion. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a super American way of understanding work and things like that. But I think I started to pay attention to the way God was moving, where he was making it possible that I could do what I love and care for myself and my family. And so when I saw that, it was like, oh, maybe I can leave Wendy's and be okay. You know, when I saw that it was a wise decision to make, mm-hmm. rather than just a passion project.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been writing my whole life. I think I've told the story before. When I was 8 o'clock, my first story was about everybody died, even the narrator.
She's writing happy stories your whole life. Happy.
They were all like the last words in the story were the narrator being like, and now I lay down in the snow and I die.
I like that though.
It's good. It's poetic.
I like
it. It's good. So I always knew that I wanted to be a writer. But when I got married, and I guess we'll kind of get into this with the next few questions. But when I got married, I thought that I had to stop working and that I needed to, okay, like that part of my life is over. Now it's time to, raise my kids and, you know, maybe homeschool, be pregnant, you know.
Which is work.
Which is work.
Hello.
And so is homeschooling, and so is raising kids, and so is keeping home.
Yeah.
But I only thought that one kind of work was acceptable for me. Mm. And so it was my husband, it was Philip, who was like, hey, you should start a blog. You're really good at writing. Or you should talk to this person who is interested in maybe like some writing projects from you, or you should. And so it really was Philip who kind of helped nudge me into doing more work that was geared towards the things that I was specifically passionate about. I think without him, I probably would have just been like, no, I'm just supposed to do this. And I want to be really careful because it still was work either way. Yeah. Right. Like being a stay-at-home mom is work.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, this is the work that I'm allowed to do.
Yeah.
And it took Philip to be like,
we have a bigger vision.
Yes. Like we can do both. And then which involves him kind of having to take on more and be more involved and be more present because now we both work full time. So it was really an act of selflessness on his part as well to just be like, I want you to be able to pursue your passion. And that means that I'm going to have to sacrifice some things as well. And he was willing to do that. So
I have a question, Jasmine. So recently on your Instagram, you've kind of been sharing about how this is I think the first year that you haven't been teaching in school. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of some of the grief attached to that. I guess my question would be, that's obviously something that you have a passion for and something you've been working, like a field you've been working in for a long time. And so I guess what was the process where you saw, this is a work that I love to do, but I'm not going to continue to do, I guess, in this way.
Yeah.
And how do you, I don't know, how do you encourage the people where it's like a season is coming where I can't do what I love to do? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I was a teacher for 9 years. That was my first job out of college. Middle school teacher, which is it's calling. It is a calling. I'm not a saint. I'm just afraid of high schoolers, and I don't have patience for elementary school.
So that's a good bit of
middle
around.
Schoolers are snarky and awkward, and I'm like, that's me too. So that worked. That worked for me. But yeah, I had talked to you in, when were we in Chicago? Was that April?
Yes.
Because I think even when I talked to you in April, I was still kind of like, I don't know if I'm going to quit.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
You're talking about going to school.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I kept telling Philip, like, I think I'm called to teach. Like, I just feel like I'm called to teach, and I feel like I'm called to be here. And I have been, like, the only Black teacher of the 9 years that I've taught, I've been the only Black teacher at the school for 8 of those years. I have had majority Black students 1 year. And so it just was, not only was it teaching, but it was also this like ministry of being the one to stand out. And then when all of the things over the last few years that have happened, so that have shaped our culture and have shaped our society, made it more and more uncomfortable for me to be in that situation. And so I kind of had to decide, like, is this discomfort something that I'm called to keep pursuing and pressing into, or is this discomfort kind of a restlessness of God telling me, hey, I have other things for you to do? It was hard.
Yeah.
And I just remember I kept telling my husband, well, I'm called to be a teacher. And he finally was like, are you called to be a teacher or are you afraid to stop teaching because you don't know who you are if you're not teaching? And I was like,
okay. Throwing stones now.
Well, now I have to pray about that. And I did. I had to pray about it a lot. And honestly, I thought I had a lot of grief at the end of the year and was very afraid to go into this year not teaching. But school started last week for my son and at the school that I was most recently working at. And I was like, I thought I was going to be really sad, but it was really time to go. And I think it was just the Holy Spirit that helped me navigate. Like, I had to pray a lot and talk to a lot of people. I talked to you. I talked to Philip. I didn't talk to me. I didn't talk to you.
I'm not her.
She's talking now.
I'm talking now.
See.
I saw Jackie. That's why I talked to her.
Without me. I mean, y'all were hanging out without me. I mean, that's okay. Good. I'm not on the outside.
You're like Melissa Krueger. Doing your TGC thing.
I feel like I text Melissa when I'm like desperate. Like, I texted her the other night and I was like, my firstborn is going to school and I'm about to have another baby and I don't know who I am right now. I know.
I'm like, I'll hold your hand and you'll be okay.
I know. She's like, I'm just going to hug you when I see you. I was like, okay.
That was sweet.
But I do think what you said is a really good point about some of our angst about work is it was your identity. Mm-hmm. I am a teacher. And I felt that when I left teaching.
That's one of those professions that just like, those helping professions will completely shape you.
Yes. Yes. And one, I felt, because I taught high school math, loved it. I felt very comfortable in those roles. And when I left it for a small season to be a stay-at-home mom. And I realized culturally, we often say, hey, what's your name? Oh, what do you do? And you're like, who am I now that I don't have a formal title?
Right.
And so it was, and then when I even started writing, I'm like, no, I am a math major. I am not a writer. So I felt for a long time, like, I couldn't say I write books.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I'm pretending to write books because people keep asking me to, but I'm not a writer.
Right.
You know, but it takes time. I think our work can be so wrapped up in our identity.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and I don't know how we, maybe, here's a question. So when have you seen work move from a good thing to maybe an idol in your life? Like, or can it become that? Or how do you see it? And I think the way I see it in some instances, when it becomes about a bigger idol, like money or something like that, when it, because one thing, you know, when you're working at Wendy's all day to then do what you're passionate about at night, you know, it's from the heart.
Yes.
But when you're doing what you're passionate about to get paid, sometimes you're like, am I doing this because I really love it or just because that's work? Mm-hmm. I'm getting paid.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to know when it moves from this is good, it's doing a good thing, into no, I'm actually serving this.
Yeah.
I'm willing to sacrifice God things for this work thing.
Yeah. I think that's the evidence of the idolatry, is that you're willing to relinquish spiritual things, namely God, to serve the idol. So you start to see, you know, your friendships change, your time at church change, your thought processes. Like, I remember there was one friend I had, and both of us love to talk about business and things like that. And I noticed every time we went out to eat, all we talked about was business. All we talked about was business. And I started to feel convicted, like, that's a problem. Our entire conversation is just about our work in terms of the profitability of it. And so I do remember this time I was at this this one TGC thing, I don't know. And there was a panel, and this lady was talking about her mother and how her mother kind of went through this interesting crisis when she was around 70 or 80 in terms of her identity. And she was saying that I reached an age where a lot of the things that I always used to do, or the kinds of works I used to be in, I no longer do. And so I don't know who I am. She was like, for 30, 40 years, I was a Sunday school teacher. I'm not. I was a wife. My husband's gone. I was a mother. Some of my children have passed on before me. And it's not that she's no longer a mother. It's just the exercises that were attached to that identity, all of them have shifted. And now she's this older lady in her home. Like, who am I? Because so much of her worth was attached to what she was able to do. Now that she's not able to do it, the question is, who is she? And I was like, man, that's a, it made me really start to think, I don't want to get to a point where I'm older and now I'm confused about my place in the world.
I felt that about teaching. I think teaching was an idol for me in a lot of ways. Cause I was like, it's an easy identifier. Because when you're a writer or a speaker or a, like, you don't have the typical 9-to-5. I sometimes feel like people don't take it seriously. And they're like, what do you do? And you're like, I'm a writer. And they're like, are you?
No, they don't take it
seriously. Like, what? It's like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. So you self-publish trashy romance novels? Or like...
with people dying at the end.
Just right, with people laying in the snow and dying at the end. And it takes a lot of... I'm not good at marketing myself and kind of like pushing myself forward. My husband's family gets onto me for that all the time. They're like, you always downplay everything. And I remember when I quit my teaching job, my boss was just like, well, I think it's really great that you're going to like spend more time with your side hobby, you know, like
side hobby.
And I was just like, this is these people that I've been working with for 4 years don't know that they're my side hobby. And like, because of the way that I talk about my work is I downplay it all the time to the point where the person that I work for thought that the $800 a month that I was bringing in teaching was like,
that's the real job.
My like full vocation. But that feels safer than saying like, I'm a writer. And people say like, what do you write? And I'm like,
how about shame?
Shame, which I feel right now. An expert on it. So yeah, I think teaching for me was like a safety, like it felt like a safe thing to say that I did. In the same way that I think the little stint of time that I wasn't working outside the home and was a stay-at-home mom, that felt also like a safe identity because that's like what you're supposed to be doing. But as soon as you say like writer and have to like give more details, I was always like,
That's weird. I think women, it's interesting. You know, we have... potentially, this isn't always the case because you may be a woman who works the same job for 40 years and, you know, and that's great. But a lot of us go through a lot more ups and downs in our careers or changes than maybe men do. Not always. I mean, some men are changing it up all the time. But one word of encouragement, I would say, I feel like as a woman, I've been able to be real open-handed with my work in a way that I don't think my husband felt the same freedom. And now I have the luxury of being married, you know, so I was, you know, he was the one officially supporting us while I was just doing part-time work and different jobs along the way. So that was kind of, but we often think, oh, well, it's the woman who has to give up the job. But what I actually found is by being a mom and working part-time and now I work full-time again, but I had the opportunity to try some things without it being as defining. And that was good in some ways, meaning my whole life didn't rely on me bringing home money, I guess, if that makes sense. So it allowed me to have what I call, there's a really good book. It talks about, it's called Mindset, I think. And it talks about having a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset. And sometimes we can get really fixed. This is what my major was. This is what I do. And I was talking to some young college women the other day. And one thing I said to them was, if I'd had that mindset, I would be teaching math right now still. My job didn't exist when I was in college. So I think it's always helpful to tell younger people, especially, just be open-handed to what the Lord may bring you through. And the job that you may have in 20 years might not exist today. I mean, you know, Google didn't exist when I was in college. Yeah, I mean, I remember my friend telling me about email for the first time my junior year in college. She's like, there's this thing and you can send a letter and it gets there right away. And I was like, that is impossible. That can't happen. You know, and so there's a whole world that may happen in 20 years that doesn't even exist right now. And so I wonder what steps can people be taking with their work. Let's say you are a stay-at-home mom. Let's talk to a stay-at-home mom who maybe feels like, I want to do something, but right now I've got four kids at home and I can't even breathe. What do you mean? How do I have a dream for maybe something I would do later? What would you say to a mom like that?
Well, I think all of it. How old is your oldest, Jackie?
Six.
Yeah, my oldest is five.
I'm tired for you.
I have a 5 and an almost, well, a 2.5, and then I'll have a newborn by the end of the year. And it's been really interesting learning how to balance, especially, and then I've been pregnant. I've been so sick this pregnancy. Everybody keeps saying like, oh, you look so amazing. You've barely gained any weight. It's like, because I can't eat anything. Don't compliment me on my suffering. But, so I've been in the bed a lot this year, like most of the time. Like when I tell my soon to be middle child, we call him Poot. So I'm like, Poot, time to spend time with mama. And he will immediately go to bed and like jump in my bed and get covers on and be like, come on, mama, and like pat the place next to him. Cause like that's how we spend time together, is in bed together. And just reading books or doing whatever. Cause I'm tired and I'm like nauseous. And so this has been a really formative, because I got pregnant in January. So like all of 2021 has just been me not being enough for my children and not being enough at my work and not being enough at wifehood, because I've just been really sick. And it's really been a redefining time for me, because I realized that so much of my identity came from what I was able to do. Like, I'm really good at cooking and I take care of the cleaning, and I would be the mom who like took her kids on 2-hour walks every day. And like, I'm the fun mom. Like, we play, we run around, we tickle, we wrestle, you know, we do all these things. And so all of the identity that I had in both motherhood and work got shaken up this year by having to just lay in the bed and be pregnant.
And which is work.
Yes. Your body's working.
Yeah. My body's working, and that's just, but it's feeling like, it's crazy because your body's working, but it feels like it's falling apart. You're like, this is good. So I think my encouragement would just be realizing that the path forward may not look as neat and tidy as you think it's going to look. And also realizing that so much of our identity, I'll just speak to, you know, to women, comes from what we do, whether it's professionally or relationally, whether it's in the home or outside of the home. So much of our identity comes from proving that we're worthy, that we are, that we're useful, that we're successful. Whether it's, you know, successful at running the house like June Cleaver, or successful at our corporate, like, it's just so tied up in work, what we do, what we can deliver. And this year has been a year where I've not been able to deliver as much as normal. And he's revealed a lot of idolatry and a lot of shame and a lot of stock that I was putting in what I was able to do.
Yeah.
So my main advice would just be to get in touch with that, so God doesn't have to get you in touch with that. Because I did not enjoy. God was like, let me show you something.
Yeah.
So if you can learn from my experience and not have to be shown, I recommend that. Just taking stock of knowing where your worth comes from, and knowing that it doesn't come from the work that you do either inside of the home or outside of the home, is the first step.
And knowing what your actual mission is. So my mission is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever in whatever I do today. So that might mean I'm doing that laying flat on my back, you know, sick. Because, I mean, there are a lot of people out there who do suffer every day from physical ailments that prevent them from traditional work.
Right.
But to know that, oh, my goal today is to glorify God even in my sickness, even in my weakness, even in my suffering. When I can put that mission on, I think I'll still be 70 and be able to say my mission hasn't changed.
Amen.
Like, that's the mission I can hold on to, because then I want to be the lady in the rest home saying, can I tell you about Jesus?
Yeah.
And if I can't talk, I want to be the lady who's praying for the nurses and for the doctors. I want to be that. But I realize I've got to start being that today if I want to be that at 70. And that, I think this is the beauty of the Christian life. We always have purpose.
Yeah.
You know, our secular friends, our people who don't know Jesus, they will eventually get to the end of their days and maybe become purposeless in their minds, you know, where, I mean, they're not, we know, because they're created in the image of God. They're not purposeless. But like, the wonder of being a Christian is, while I have breath, there are fields that are white for harvest. And so our mission never changes, but our maybe our mode does, like what we're doing to accomplish that mission. So it may be wiping little runny noses is what you're given today. And can you do it joyfully unto the Lord? It might be stand up and speaking to 10,000 women is what your mission is for today. Can you do that joyfully to the Lord? Yeah, no. Jasmine says no. But, you know, and that's freeing. Like, I can only do what he's enabled me to do rather than I have to stiff upper lip it and push through. And I think that's God honoring to say, I am limited. I'm not God. So the world will run if Melissa doesn't work. And that's refreshing to Sabbath. Consider.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a good question. What is the place of Sabbath in all of this? You know, because, I mean, Jesus, God, the Father, they told us, or they like made it a law. Hey, there's one day that's set apart as holy. You're not going to work on that day. And so I think there's a principle of Sabbath that should be applied, but that's harder to apply because, again, it feels like if I don't do this, if I don't do the dishes, if I don't clean the house, if I don't go to work, if I don't do all this, if I don't post my content and create my blog, everything's going to go to crap. What is it that we're supposed to be believing about God that would help us to actually practice Sabbath in real life?
That's a good question. I think Sabbath forces us to believe what he says about himself, that he's sufficient. Because we have to stop and acknowledge his holiness and acknowledge his provision and acknowledge that no matter how much work our hands are doing, at the end of the day, it's him who's worthy of glory and praise. And at the end of the day, that's the reason why we're working in the first place.
Yeah.
So I think one of the purposes of Sabbath is a reminder.
And that everything we have has been given. Every gift we have has been given to us. You know, what makes you better than anyone else? Don't you know that? You know, that I think of that, those words from Paul. And he's like, everything you have is a gift. And when I can see it that way, I realize God will make up whatever I'm lacking with his body. And I think that's the beautiful thing about the church. You know, where I am insufficient, one of you are going to be able to fill in with your giftedness. Like, he's created the body in such a beautiful way that it works, but it only works together. A pinky can't do anything on its own. You know, the knee can't do anything unless it's connected to the ligaments. And if I could just remember, the weight of the world does not rest on me, doesn't rest on you. And I think that's where I see my idolatry come in. I want to be like God in a way I'm never intended to be like God. You know, he wants me to be loving, joyful, peaceful, patient, kind, gentle, like him. But I'm not supposed to be all-knowing. I'm not supposed to be all-powerful. I'm not, you know, and I think even with our phones, it's this little instrument that can make us all-knowing.
Oh, for sure.
And so sometimes I think I feel pressured to do work I'm not called to. Like, even if it's just the work of prayer, you know, I could... There's so much going on in the world that we think I'm supposed to know about everything and pray about everything and post about how I'm praying about it on Instagram, you know, or whatever.
So
like,
you
it's
know that I'm doing the work.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's a lot. And to be able to rest in the God who has it under control. Like, I do think he calls us saying, come sit with me. And so that's when I start to see my idolatry. If I'm so thinking I have to do and I can't sit still in the word, that's a red flag to me.
We were listening to Exodus. Phil and I listened to, I finished reading the Bible in a year for the first time.
Look at you. I did doing it. Good work.
I did it. and Philip has just started. And so he's in Exodus. And so we're laying in bed at night. And we're listening to Exodus and we're listening to the manna. And first, like, we're just like, I think it's because it's like nighttime. We're just like listening to it. We're just talking. And we're like, man, like, Moses just be talking to God, like, whatever. Like, it's just like, look, I'm out here in the wilderness. What are you going to, I need help. Like, what is it? And, but the other thing that we noticed was like, he gave the Israelites manna that was just enough for every day. And he told them only take just enough for the day and don't take anything more. And so, we've heard this story like so many times, but we're sitting there laying in bed and I'm like, they about to take more. Like, I just, they can't help it. They can't, they don't like listen to God. They took more. And then the next day it was all rotten. And God was like, I told you to only take what you needed. And that's such a like lesson in, he sustains us day by day. Yeah. And so often we're like trying to take on so much more than that.
Yeah.
And he's telling us, like, with Sabbath, he's telling us, you only take on so much.
Yeah.
And I really do have the rest.
Yeah.
And it's such a good object lesson for the Israelites who just like.
Yeah, it's like we're constantly trying to transcend our neediness.
Mm-hmm.
Like we just don't want to feel human,
mm-hmm.
which is meaning we don't want to feel dependent upon anybody
right.
for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's okay to acknowledge that you are needy.
Mm.
I think I think the pandemic and so many of our trials and our tribulations is really God saying, no, you're very needy.
Right.
And that's okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The only needless one is me. And so cling, rest, trust, and you'll actually kind of have an easier life. It'll still be hard.
Yeah.
But at least you might have some joy and right. some unnecessary anxiety. Because you've trusted me to be all that I can be for you. So.
And we may see God come through with his chariots that we can't see. Mm-hmm. Like when, was it Elijah who said, look,
yeah.
see the armies of God? You know, and he couldn't see, and then they appear. Mm-hmm. I might really be off on where that is. But
yeah, it's scary, wherever it is.
Yeah, life. And mm-hmm. I think when we only see ourselves and we just keep working harder and harder, we never actually get to see the Lord
mm-hmm.
do immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine.
Yeah.
You know, and so it is sometimes, for me, it's been sometimes when I lift up my hands, I'm kind of like, I can't. And then he provides. And I'm like, why didn't I ask earlier?
Right.
You know, why didn't I ask for your help?
Mm-hmm.
And why am I so prideful? I mean, it really is, I don't want to have to ask him
mm-hmm.
for help again.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I feel like a needy beggar, and I just need to probably be like, I'm going to be that my whole life.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah. That's why I think we just have to be reminded that God is our Lord, but also our Father,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so our burdens aren't burdensome to him. Yeah. And I know, depending on how we were parented, that might just be a framework that we have to get rid of.
Yeah, right.
you that's know, right, our right. parents are like, stop asking me. All this, da, 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 da. Mm-hmm. And that's because they're human.
That's right. Right. Right.
But God is like, no, give me your cares.
Yeah.
Because I care. And that's okay. So.
And actually, one of my greatest frustrations as a parent is when my kids won't ask for help. Yeah, mm. I do it. I remember they were little. I do it myself. Yeah, I mean, they just stubborn, mm-hmm. and they would not want my help, whether it was tying their shoes or putting on their pants backwards or inside out or whatever they were doing. And you're like, this is going to take so much longer because you just won't let me help you.
Right.
You know, and I wonder sometimes if the Lord is up saying this is going to take so much
all
longer.
The time
because you just
look at you trying to tie your shoe.
Yes.
And you don't even know how to tie your shoe. You ain't even read it in Leviticus how to tie your shoe, and you over here trying to work from ignorance.
Exactly.
I don't think that would be in Leviticus if there was such a thing.
Oh, for sure.
The law on how to tie your shoe.
How to tie your shoe.
Okay, so let me ask you this. What was your first job? Just random.
My first job, well, I was a research assistant.
Oh,
you're like, that
you
was
went
your
fancy
first job?
Immediately. Yeah, I made burgers and Wendy's.
Okay. And I worked at Belk's, which is a department store.
Uh-huh.
Handing, okay, well, I was hired during the Christmas season to hand out the tissue paper. That's all I was supposed to be doing. So when someone didn't want to go get their gift wrap,
right,
free gift wrap, I just was supposed to hand it. Well, then they got really busy one day in the gift wrap section, and they made me go back and wrap a gift.
It didn't go well.
I apologized. Oh, I wrapped it. It looked so terrible. I had no...
They didn't show you how to wrap
it? No, they didn't show me how. So I'm watching these. And these women who work back there, they're like professionals.
Yes.
They have been working there for 30 years, and they know what they're doing. And I wrapped it so awfully. And I handed it to the lady, and I was like, I'm sorry.
Was she merciful?
She was nice. I think she was thinking, well, now I got to go home and rewrap
like,
this.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm sorry. But I really did learn. I finally learned. So now I can wrap things.
Look at God.
Pretty.
Look at you.
He makes all things work together.
He does.
Work together. Hello.
Hey, on that note, every week on Let's Talk, we like to end by talking about our favorite things. And this week, I want to know, what is your favorite place to work? Not like place of employment, but like place in your house or at the coffee shop or wherever that you work.
Yeah, a coffee shop preferably. When I was working on my first book, I realized, one, that I could not work at home. Mm. Because it's too many distractions, mm-hmm. but also it's too many comforts. Mm. Because it's like me knowing that my bed is down the hall. It's kind of like, yeah, I'm going to take a long break and lay down. And then the TV's right there. It's just not a thing. And so when I was in Chicago, I would work at this coffee shop that had really good food, really good coffee, but it was also mildly uncomfortable. And it was something about the uncomfortability of it all that made me work more diligently because I wasn't so relaxed. It was weird, but that's my thing now. Yeah.
I have been pregnant for both of my last two books. So
you're pregnant and doing books. That's like double. That's like twins.
Yeah. So the bed. So yeah, my manuscript with Mother to Son was due the week after Langston was born. And my manuscript with the book about shame that I'm writing is due the same week that Jamie is due.
Yeah.
So I've just been, I just work in the bed.
You succeed.
I do, because my process, I'm not very, people are like, what's your writing process? Like, let me get in your head. I'm like, I write when I feel like it.
And you have a superpower.
And I don't edit it. I just write when I feel like it, and what I write is what's there.
Yeah.
That's nice.
So my editors
And you write really fast.
My editors are my favorite people.
Ridiculously fast.
Yes, remember
you
that?
You could be like the Olympic sprinter.
Remember that deadline?
I know.
That book I couldn't remember the last time we were together.
Identity Theft. The book that you wrote a chapter in.
I literally woke up that morning, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's due today. And I wrote it, and people were like, oh, I was such a bully. And I was like, I don't know what I said.
Yeah, I know. Wow. I know. I'm not.
People shouldn't do that. But, no. Like, I don't have a lot of talents, so I'm just going to lead into that one like, that I have.
It's your superpower.
That's my one. Which is pretty good.
I am completely boring. I need complete silence. That's why I can't work at a coffee shop or anywhere. Mm. And so I work at a desk upstairs. I mean, this is best when my kids aren't home, but they know they're old enough now. They're mm-hmm. not running in, you know. And I work at my desk. I need all my stuff right around me. I need it really quiet. I need a cup of tea. And then, because I have back issues, I will actually write a good bit laying on the floor like this. Really? You know, I mean, I'm just laying down. I mean, I just have to shift. I can't do that at a coffee shop mm-hmm. either because that'd be mm-hmm. awkward. I really have to have complete quiet. That's my big thing. So I'd start hearing everybody's conversation at a coffee shop. I'd be thinking, huh, I wonder what they're going to do about that situation they're discussing. Right. Like, I hear too much. Yeah. And music distracts me. Everything distracts me.
I write with my kids, like, dancing on my head.
That's amazing.
Because I think it's because I have so many younger siblings that I'm just like, it's fine.
That's amazing. Yeah. We're excited to share with you about our sponsor this year. It's Crossway, which we all love to get books from them. And today we are talking about a book from Jonathan Gibson. Jasmine, you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yes. It is called Be Thou My Vision, a liturgy for daily worship. And it's just what it says. It's 31 devotionals that should take you about 15, 20 minutes to finish every day. You can tack it on the beginning or the end of your quiet time. And it just seems like a really easy, simple way to worship God.
Yeah, I love it. I love that.
And I like the book cover.
You like the cover?
It's pretty. I like the book name because it makes me want to sing the song, but I won't do that.
I like it because it switches things up a little bit.
Yes.
Like, I can get into a rut in my prayer life, or mm-hmm. I'm reading the same Bible passages over and over and over again. I like that it kind of, I noticed that like the Nicene Creed's in there. And sometimes I just love to read something like an old creed that was, someone took a lot of time to write this. Mm. And it really is worshipful in a beautiful way mm-hmm. that these words express what our hearts know, but they say it better. That's what I love about old hymns.
Yeah,
they say it better. So I love that he kind of does that for us and put it all in one.
I think we miss liturgy a lot in our modern church environments. And so it's really cool that you can bring this into every day.
Yeah.
Jackie, can you tell us where to pick up Be Thou My Vision?
Yeah, they can get it wherever books are sold, or they can visit crossway.org/+. And when they do that, they can find out how to get 30% off.
Ooh, awesome.
You know, and the saints love discounts. So do it. All right, y'all. Thank you for listening to this episode of Let's Talk and joining us for season number 3. We hope that you'll subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Check out other shows from the Gospel Coalition Podcast Network at tgc.org/podcasts. The Gospel Coalition supports the church in making disciples of all nations by providing resources that are trusted and timely, winsome and wise, and centered on the gospel of Jesus Christ.